Hi, and welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray. I'm a coach, and I primarily support working parents and carers who believe that parenthood shouldn't be a barrier to a successful and fulfilling career. In this podcast series, I chat to inspirational working parents and ask them to share their own experiences of raising children alongside their careers. We talk about the struggles and the moments of joy. And I hope in each episode, there's something that can bring you a bit more strength and positivity. So please follow, listen, and subscribe on all major platforms. So with no further ado, today I'm joined by Abby Mangold, founder and MD of the Mangold Consultancy. Abby has always been someone I've had great respect for. She not only runs a very successful crisis and communications business, but she also raises two lovely boys and a sprudel called Betsy. I believe it is a sprudel. That's correct. Okay. So hi, Abby, and thanks so much for coming on. I'm familiar with PR as a concept, but what exactly are crisis communications and what kind of challenges would a company be facing if they had to call on you?
Aisha, thanks so much for having me. It's very exciting to be here and great to be one of, I think, the first people or at the beginning of your podcast journey. So congratulations in the first instance on. So I'll just go back a tiny bit, if I may. My background is as a journalist. So I worked for BBC Television for about 15 years, working on lots of undercover, secretly filmed programmes, going inside organisations. I was never brave enough to go undercover, but I managed teams going undercover. And so a huge part of my work, working on Watchdog, working on a programme sadly now defunct called Whistleblower, was investigating companies and really trying to get the truth behind how they operated, predominantly badly is what we were looking at. And so I got a really good understanding of companies who were smart operators and good operators, those who took it on the chin, those who were able to give a kind of strong rebuttal to quite serious allegations that BBC TV was making. So, and I spent an awful lot of that time working with Anne Robinson, who was the presenter of Watchdog at the time. And I spent a lot of time in the studio on programme transmission day playing the company spokesperson. So she would run through probably a couple of times on programme transmission day, the interview, the big interview with the company spokesperson, and I played that role. And I did it for quite a long time, and then people within the BBC started saying to me, you should go and do this professionally. And I never wanted to be a spokesperson, but it did open my eyes a little bit to really going to the other side, and a lot of people would say going to the dark side. So I left the BBC and went to advise companies who were being challenged by programmes like Watchdog, but all sorts of challenge from newspapers to radio, to broadcast, to a whole range of stakeholders. And because of the nature of what I'd done, it was clear that they wanted, the agency I worked for, wanted to use my expertise in being a journalist to help inform their clients. And having done some time with them in their crisis and corporates department, I then started Mangold Consultancy about 6 years ago. So I've never really done what I would call PR, all the kind of nice positive stuff. I do the stuff when the poo's hitting the fan.
Yeah.
So in essence, if as an organisation you have got something wrong, behaved inappropriately, both from an outward perspective, so from an external point of view, but also from an internal point of view, if there's something about your reputation that is deemed to be untrue and you're being challenged on it, that's the kind of reason that clients would come to us.
So, Abby, just before we delve into a bit more around the sort of parent equation and the theme of this podcast, obviously, moving from a very secure environment at the BBC, where you'd been for a long time, very successfully, through other agencies and then into your own business, it's a brave step. It's a brave step for anyone to take, to move out of their comfort zone to something quite different, and especially working for yourself. So what spurred you on to do it? And how did you manage that quite massive change?
Honestly, Aisha, I think the truth is there were times when I didn't manage it. And one of the things for me that was most difficult was admitting to that. I'd had a very successful career at the BBC. I suspect I could have stayed there forever and become part of the furniture. And I wasn't pushed hard enough. I wasn't driven enough. I didn't see the future from a professional point of view very clearly. And I made the change when my second son was only 11 months old. I'd been thinking about it for years. You know, none of these decisions are made quickly. I'd been thinking about it for years, and the time just came. I just got to the point where I was like, I can't, I don't want to do this anymore. There is more to me than what I'm doing. Yeah. So I did lots of digging around. I had lots of confidential conversations with people who, you know, I'd had to call when I was on Watchdog to say, you're about to be on Watchdog. And I'd call them and I said, can I talk to you? You're in communications. I want to leave the BBC. What's your advice? So I really got lots and lots of good advice from a broad range of people, you know, not just mates, people I didn't know, but who were very strong in their industry. And I went to an agency. It was a fantastic experience and I learned so much. But it pretty much nearly broke me. Going from a non-commercial organisation like the BBC to a hugely commercial and numbers-driven business was a huge shock. And just even the way that operated and what it meant in terms of the things I had to think about when I was talking to clients, how much time can I give them? Every moment of my time is counted. And when I didn't make it, I really felt like a failure. I really, really did. And I found it very difficult. I had to take quite a lot of time off work. I wouldn't say I had a breakdown, but I was on a really, really low ebb. And I've never felt like that before. And there were so many factors that came into it. You know, at that point, I had two quite young children. And you know what childcare costs are like. We were spending £2,000-£2,500 a month on childcare. And it was like, how are we going to do that if we haven't both got incomes? But I can remember one of the most important things for me. Well, there were lots of things, but I can remember thinking work gets the best Abby and my family get the tired, angry, miserable one. And that's just not right. And that was a huge, huge driver in me leaving. I just felt that quite strongly. I also, for anyone else who is facing that, I spent a lot of time in talking therapy, working it through as well, which made a huge, huge difference. And I never wanted to run my own business ever. It had never been an ambition of mine, but I did like what I did. And I did feel that in my old agency, I was stretched so thinly that I was never able to give everyone actually in any sort of good level of service because I was working across so many clients. So the one thing I started out thinking was I need to make enough money to pay the mortgage. That's the baseline. And I need to not stretch myself so thinly. If you've got a crisis, you want to call up and you want to get the person in charge, i.e. me, which is something that also wasn't happening at my agency. So it's touch wood. You know, been 6 years, and I got told recently that once you've done 5 years in your business, that's a really good position to be in. It means the business is doing well. But it was really hard, and it was there were a lot of difficult emotional decisions, and a lot of times where I was having to work through the night. But then you do when you've got a new business. So, does that answer your question?
No, that absolutely does. So 5 years on, well, 6 years on. So firstly, congratulations for getting that far. Because as you say, I think it's the first couple of years are the real test of most people's businesses where you're just getting up and running, just getting the word of mouth out there, etc. So to get past that is phenomenal in itself. And then to do that alongside raising two boys and a dog is additionally phenomenal. So we can say, I think with certainty, your business is now a success, which is great.
Yeah.
So at the end of a working day, what does success look and feel like for you, would you say?
I mean, the goals have shifted. At the beginning, it was have enough money to pay the mortgage. Mm. During the time that I was growing the business, my partner was hugely supportive and luckily was in a position to be able to flex his work as well, which meant that you know, because in crisis, when the phone goes and the poo's hitting the fan, you really, really have to give your whole life to it. So that was a huge part of the business being a success. Then it sort of grew into, it got to the point where I sort of thought I need some help, but I really didn't want to like hand over control to anybody else. I think, you know, I'm not alone in being someone who kind of quite likes control, and I really, really didn't want someone else doing it, but it got to the point where I realized I did need support. So I brought in someone who I worked with for a year or so. And then it got to the point where I thought, actually, it's quite nice to have a team to go to. It very much started as a one-man band. And what I realized was, as the clients grew, as my bigger retainers grew, you know, if I was going to in any way align myself with an agency, and I don't for 1 second think of myself as an agency. I do think of Mangold Consultancy as a consultancy. Yeah. But I thought, if we are actually going to go and get some of these big accounts, which we're now getting, there's got to be more than me, because, you know, I've got to have a holiday. I've got to look after my kids. I might get sick. And so I think success was bringing other people on board. And now I've got a team of, well, my sister is a director in the company. She is an ex-journalist who went into comms like me, but she was on the newspaper side. I've got another fantastic freelancer, a mum with 4 kids, mm-hmm. got lots of experience and is just fantastic. As we sort of work together within the school day. So I know if I give her some, ask her to do something between 9 and 3, we're probably going to be okay. And I know that if something's coming up over half term, for example, I've got some media training coming up just after half term. And so we talked before and I said, look, this is coming up. Can you work in half term? And just, I suppose, being aware of what other people are going yeah. through as parents. And she's like, because you've given me the notice, that's absolutely fine. I can make it work. So I work with her, and then I work with a social media director, and he's based in Manchester. So I guess success there has been building a team and having a team who can now call my clients. It doesn't always have to be me. Yeah. And long term, well, my situation is slightly different now in that I'm no longer with my partner, but the boys are older, so that makes it slightly easier. My eldest is now walking himself to and from school, so that makes a big difference. I don't know. There's a big question. What does success look like now? Honestly, at the moment, with the world we're living in, just being able to keep the business going and being able to continue to employ, albeit through on a freelance basis, as many people as I can is a real goal for me at the moment. So I think that's what success would look like, to still be here in a year's time and to still be able to employ other people.
Yeah, and I think it's great, as you've alluded to, being able to employ a fellow working parent, where you can both empathize with each other's daily challenges and struggles and be able to provide an income for both of you and work around that is a great thing that you're able to do that with your business.
And I do think people who have kids and work with people who have kids understand that nuance quite well. I observed that people with children sometimes can't do the work at the time you want to do it. It's just like me. Yeah. But I also observe that they'll work into the night or first thing in the morning to make it happen. And I also think, you know, I have like a baseline, which is anybody who invoices me, any freelancers, I'm committed to paying them within 2 weeks. I don't ever make people wait more than 2 weeks to be paid. And it's those kinds of things that I think breed loyalty. And certainly in my business, where we're dealing with a lot of highly confidential information and some very senior people, loyalty is really important. And being empathetic to people's home, to their home situation, is a huge, huge part of that. But also, you know, kids bring something to the table, particularly, and I can think of, I did a media training the other day with a music label. And my son started talking to me about TikTok, and because I was saying to him, oh, I'm interviewing this guy and, you know, we're going to be talking about different kinds of music. And he was like, well, what about TikTok? I hear all my music in TikTok. So, you know, there are definitely elements now to my kids are adding to that.
Well, your kids now, the age they are consumers. You know, they are consuming independently of you. And have their own opinions, don't they? Have their own opinions and views, which is usually helpful.
He really is like, he's like the charts kind of, yeah, whatever. He will listen to a tune on the radio and say, oh, yeah, I know that from TikTok. It was just, it's just fascinating. It really is. And you're right. They are absolutely consumers and sometimes have quite a different take on stuff than I do, which is particularly in what I do, it's quite useful to get a range of opinions on what people think of the way, the perception of a company, the reputation of the company, what people think of it.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid to admit that I don't know much about TikTok, so I will just leave that conversation there. And maybe chat to my daughter.
It's a tiny bit of advice, so don't get started on it.
So you always have a very busy life, you have a family to look after and a very busy business, successful business to run. But obviously time to yourself is very, very important, especially at the moment. So how do you make sure you carve out enough time for you, whatever you might be? So whether that be exercise, meditation, a glass of wine, just peace and quiet. But how do you actually make sure that happens?
So one of the things that was so detrimental when I worked at an agency in London was my mental health and my work-life balance. And someone said to me once, no work-life balance is the same for any two people. And it's absolutely true. For some people, you know, they want a lot of work and, you know, actually that kind of 1-2 hours with their kids in the evening is exactly what I want. So it's different for everybody. One of the things I learned is you have to make some of that time for yourself. And I actually have an office in my garden now, so I have a little mini commute. But in the days when I literally worked at my dining room table, it was really, really important to step away. So having the dog and walking the dog has been such a massive reason to go out and breathe fresh air and get some exercise. And particularly I found during lockdown, just because it didn't matter what craziness was going on around me, that dog needed a walk every morning and every afternoon. And that was like this consistent thing that has stayed with me from March. I mean, clearly I was walking the dog before that, but that was really important. I've always sort of struggled with my weight as well, and I tend to eat more when I'm stressed. And so exercise, I used to think of exercise as something I kind of had to do, and now exercise is part of my, not quite daily, but in a week, I need to exercise regularly and do lots of different kind of exercise. So not the same thing over and over again. And exercise has been absolutely central to my mental health, but also the energy in the business, because, you know, three times a week minimum, I have a diary entry, which is for 1 hour, which is me doing exercise. And that, everyone knows, that doesn't get eaten into. It's exactly the same as having a business meeting. It is in there. And the great thing is, of course, I mean, I'm loving virtual exercise. I know it's not for everyone. But, you know, if I have a 45-minute class, I start at 9, exercise till 9:45, run upstairs, have a shower, get changed, and I'm back at my desk at 10. It works brilliantly for me. Exercise is really, really important. And then I love dance music. I really love dance music. And I, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night, with or without the kids, there's nowhere to go. You know, a glass of wine and Annie Mac on Radio 1 and 2 hours of some crazy mum dancing where the kids are like, oh my gosh, I don't care. That you know, that makes me smile and it makes me happy and it releases endorphins. And, you know, I'm giving the children a very good education in dance music.
90s dance music specifically.
It's not all 90s. I mean, look, it's not all 90s. So finding things finding things you like and finding things that aren't something you feel you have to do. Although walking the dog I have to do, it's like a basic need for the dog. So, you know, you don't sort of, I don't whinge about me. Sometimes when it's absolutely pouring with rain and freezing cold, I don't fancy it that much. But that is, I would not work so hard and push the business that hard that I lost that in my life, because the business wouldn't work if I didn't have that time to myself.
Yeah, and my husband refers to that time as command time, which I think might be an army term, but someone can correct me, where it's time where you can genuinely, it's you and your own thoughts, and it might be with the dog beside you, but it's fresh air and it's you.
Yes.
It's not exercise, it's not noise, it's not confusion, it's not kids. It's your time to get things in order in your own mind, I guess. And that's extremely important, even more so, obviously, at the moment, I think, for everybody.
And I think there's also something, you know, for my kids, there's something about teaching them the importance of that as well. I was really interested to read my youngest son, who's still at primary school. His school have just sent through this sort of colour coding system that they're using throughout the school to help children describe how they're feeling. So green is I'm okay, everything's all right. And then it goes to blue, and then it goes to yellow, and then it goes to red for, you know, really high levels of anxiety. And they're using that, and they wanted us to replicate that at home. And I mean, A, I think that's absolutely phenomenal that a school's doing that. I couldn't imagine my school all those years ago doing that. But I also think it's important for kids, you know, I'm very proud of my business. My children are very proud of my business and support me in doing that. They seem to be completely convinced I'm going to give them free jobs, which I've told them not happening until they get decent qualifications. But and part of that pride is about saying to them, you know, I do take time out, and I do. They say, oh, mum, you're always doing exercise. And I'm like, but that's just as important as everything else. Mm. And when I was younger, that didn't, PE was like, yeah, I mean, PE was just like the embarrassing thing where you have to wear big knickers and et cetera.
Now you are showing your age.
I think integrating that into your daily life is really, the people around me who I see not doing exercise, I feel are missing out myself, you know. And you just have to do it. You just have to put it in there. You just have to schedule that time as you would a meeting. It just sits in there. It's exactly the same as for me talking to a psychotherapist. I was listening to Jamila Jamil on a podcast, and she said she invests all her money in her mental health. You know, that is where she puts her money. And actually talking to someone and doing exercise is so key for your mental health. And I that really resonated with me, because when I thought, oh, maybe I should stop and I should stop paying for it. And I thought, no, because that keeps you going. That just that touching base with someone for an hour every few weeks is hugely, hugely helpful, because there is so much going on. You know, yesterday London was put into tier two, or it was announced, and I think it's happening on Saturday. I must have spent 2.5 hours on the phone to friends and family who were kind of trying to understand it and anxious about it, and could we meet and could we not meet. And all of that's really palpable at the moment. And I think we have to look after each other and listen out for each other, but you can't do that if you're in a mess inside and all over the place.
Absolutely.
Part of that is that exercise piece. And
And I think they're talking about the talking to someone. So whether that's counselling, psychotherapy, coaching, whatever it is, there is, I think, still a stigma or a pride issue with people where they think, oh, if I admit that I need to talk to somebody, yes, I'm showing I'm showing my vulnerabilities, or it's going to expose me as being fragile and not being able to cope. But yes, that's not it at all. I think actually it's very brave and very strong to find someone to talk to.
I completely agree, but I do think that's the mindset of a lot of people. I was talking to my social director yesterday about LinkedIn, and both for a client and for the Mangold Consultancy LinkedIn strategy. And we were talking about what works and what doesn't work. And he was saying he follows it much more closely. He's an expert in this area. Is actually at the moment, LinkedIn is all about celebrating people. and celebrating achievements. And because I was really interested in a post that I put up about some new business wins we've had and the fact that I could employ my freelancers, got loads of interaction, and loads of people looked at it and commented and liked it. And I compared that to, say, a blog that I'd done about something to do with crisis comms. And he was saying, actually, it's that when you reveal a bit of yourself and that personal brand and who you are and what you represent, that's what people really engage with. And when you're doing a media interview or you're speaking or presenting, the audience engage with something that resonates with them at an emotional level. That's what you remember, is the emotional connection. But it does mean exposing a bit of yourself. And, you know, I think we've made great strides in terms of men's mental health and really pulling that up and putting that more front and centre. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people are struggling at the moment. You know, that's why I said right from the start, you know, working in an agency nearly, you know, it really, really took me down. It took me to a really bad place. And I think you have to be honest about that, because I think a lot of people feel like that. And as you say, there's nothing wrong with saying that. And I do think a problem shared and all that is very, very true.
Yeah. And at the moment, obviously, we have with all the virtual home working that everyone's now being forced into. A lot of people aren't used to that at all. So they're lacking their water cooler conversations. They're lacking their cups of tea in the kitchen. Those spontaneous conversations where you can just sort stuff out in seconds rather than having to wait for a Zoom call in an hour's time. So you've obviously you've worked from home for 6 years.
Yes.
With your business, pre-pandemic, pre all this chaos.
Yes.
So let's assume we can still meet face to face if we're not in tier 2 at some point, but we're still working from home for the majority of the time. What would your, I suppose, maybe 3 top tips be for maintaining those relationships and keeping on top of those conversations when we're not necessarily physically together?
My number one would be pick up the phone. I say this a lot to clients when we organise Zoom calls. I mean, Zoom fatigue, you know, video conferencing fatigue is a thing. We know that the brain is having to process so much more. The very process of having to constantly look into a camera, but also have other people watching you, plus you've got notes, I'm talking about professionally, but even if you're having a chat with someone, that's not normal. That's not how we operate. And the brain is having to do a lot of things. So I'll often say to clients, does it need to be a Zoom call, or should we just have a chat on the phone? And actually, for clients and personally, that's been really, really important to just say, pick up the phone and have a chat. The other thing that I do with, so at the beginning of lockdown, I think we all were a little bit better at kind of organising Zoom calls. And obviously it's got a little bit lax now as we've been able to meet, but it's going up again. But I do this with friends. I like randomly see something on the news, or because I watch the news a lot and interrogate interviews quite a lot. Last night I watched something and I just WhatsApp messaged a friend of mine who I haven't spoken for 2 or 3 months. And I was like, I saw this, it made me think of you. It's so little conversation starters like that I use quite a lot, because sometimes, you know, it can feel a bit like, how's it going? It's, you know, I'm finding it really hard, which is fine. And, you know, a lot of people are feeling like that, but it's nice to have that little kind of other thing to talk about, really. And otherwise, I think, you know, as long as we can, continuing to meet outside, particularly with the kids as well. You know, I do that with my friends locally and further away. And I think as long as we can still do that, we should continue doing that, you know. And that's really important.
I think with the kids, as you said, especially with families with only children, as some of my friends have got only children. And if they now, for the foreseeable future and over half term, can't see their friends and their peers, indoors at least, then it is vitally important, even with the weather, to keep those connections alive for them. Because it's, you know, we don't necessarily know what's going on in our kids' heads all the time. And as with the colours from your son's school, it's important for us to connect with them regularly and find out how they're feeling about all of this and involve them in conversations.
And what I find with, particularly, I think this is with boys, is that, and I'm pretty sure I've read this in that fantastic book, Raising Boys, is conversations which don't involve face-to-face are actually often more fruitful. So if we're in the kitchen cooking or doing washing up or driving in the car, where I'm not looking at them directly and we just have a nice broad round conversation. I mean, like anyone, you've got to be in the mood to have that conversation. I'm sure they try to engage me in conversations sometimes and I've got my head in a piece of work or something. But certainly with the kids, I find that non-eyeballing conversation much more fruitful. And you sort of, it's also with the kids. And so the kids go between myself and their dad every sort of couple of days. With them, I can see that they need a period, and I remember this myself from my own parents being separated, they need a period of time post time with dad where they just kind of like, man, kind of get back into being at our house again. So they need that transition time, I think, is what I'm saying. It's a bit like when you get off a plane, a long plane journey, you need a bit of decompression time. So choosing the right moments and not choosing them, they're not always when I want to have them. As I think most parents find, you know, when you finally get them down into bed, they decide they want to have a long conversation. Yeah. With you. And all you want to do is go down and watch Great British Bake Off and have a glass of wine. So, choosing the times as well. But you're absolutely right. And also, you know, I've got a couple of friends who are really brilliant at just sending little cards and little notes and getting something through the post as well. It's so lovely.
It is actually, yeah, going back to the old school traditional methods of communication, I think.
Exactly. It's like phone calls as well. There is something to be, I'm very different on a phone call because I'm not aware of what I bloody look like or what they look like or what's going on in the background. You're just focusing on that audio. And I think, and it's the same with podcasts. You know, I've listened to so many podcasts since lockdown, particularly on the dog walks. It's lovely to have that because you just get lost in that world that is so different to the visual medium. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons podcasts are doing so well. And also because you can get to a level of depth in audio that I'm not always convinced you can do visually.
So Abby, we're coming to the end of our time. So thank you so much for being on. It's been great chatting to you.
Aisha, thanks so much for having me on and brilliant to talk to you. Really, really interesting conversation.
And if people want to get hold of you, either for crisis communications or any other general advice on parent and work-life balance, what's the best way to get hold of you?
So a couple of ways. My website, which is mangoldconsultancy.com, or I'm on LinkedIn, Abby Mangold, A-B-B-Y. It'd be great to hear from anybody on any of the topics we've covered.
Great. Thank you so much, Abby, and have a lovely day.
And you. Thanks, Aisha.
So I'm sure you'll agree that we can all take something from Abby's experiences of running a successful business from home while raising two kids. Whether that's taking a brave step into something new, making sure you create time for yourself, or enjoying a good dose of 90s dance music. Thanks for listening and see you next time.